There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today, we're in California right now. So we are here with our brother sitting next to us as our special guest this week. Actually just finished up his fellowship and thought it would be a great episode for our listeners to hear. We talked a lot about sacrifice on this podcast, and this guy spent 18 years in college and just finished up. So want to hear more about his story. I want our listeners to hear more about his story. So Eric, welcome.
Thank you guys for having me. Really honored to be a part of this.
So yeah. We're super proud of you and all that you've accomplished. And so, and I think you got a great story, and I know you're just getting started. So like, I mean, what you're going to accomplish in the next, you know, several years, as far as helping children, operating, what we're going to get into, but just know, you know, Joni and I are appreciative of you doing this, because I think we wanted you to just share what you've had to sacrifice and the delayed gratification and what you've endured to become the doctor you are today. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people realize, you know, people hear about doctors and like, oh, they make all this money and they do all this thing, but they don't realize what you had to do and the training and the skill to get so specialized like you are. So, I mean, if you wouldn't mind just starting off with telling us a little bit about your journey so far, and we'll ask some questions along the way, but if you, what got you to where you are today?
Yeah. So, obviously, I mean, you guys know their story, but I grew up in Santa Fe, New Mexico as well. Our parents have been amazing and supportive of Sean and myself and Joni and my wife Sohar as well, as they've continued to help us on our journey. But they kind of paved the way. My dad is a woodworker, my mom being an OBGYN. I always thought medicine was kind of in the background, and plastic surgery specifically was kind of a perfect combination of the two things that they do. So my mom is incredibly dedicated to her patients, and she always talked about the love of caring for families and kind of the experience that she's had with her patients. So I always had that in my background. And then obviously, Sean and I worked our whole childhood in dad's shop, building things and sanding, and I can't tell you how much we sanded as a kid. So we got facile with using our hands. And so I wanted to do something that kind of was a combination of both. And that's kind of led me to plastic surgery. And specifically, my specialty is craniofacial surgery, where we take care of kids with craniofacial anomalies or deformities. So these are usually kids that are born with either a cleft lip and palate, or something that called craniosynostosis, where their shape of their head is abnormal. And we actually take apart their heads and put them back together, which is crazy. Oh, but yeah, as Joni said, it's finally accumulation of 18 years of post high school, undergraduate, and then graduate education, and then postgraduate education that I'm finally finishing. So
yeah, it's kind of surreal. 18 years. That's like, you think about that.
But you know what? Like, all this time that you've never complained about it. I've never heard you once, like, you know, complained about school, and you truly loved it, right?
Yeah. Like, medicine is a lifelong learning thing. It's not, it never ends. So every day you're still learning something new. And, mm-hmm. And I got that from mom, is that she would always talk about, like, you're still learning stuff from your patients. You're still, medicine changes every year. We learn new things. And so we're constantly updating kind of what the best treatment practices are. And we get more and more information, and as technology improves. Mm-hmm. So it's really a lifelong learning. And The reality is I'm a nerd, and so I appreciate education, and I've been fortunate enough to really been able to have spent these, like I said, 18 years with the support of those around.
No, I was just going to say, when we were at your ceremony this weekend, one of the doctors or the attendees mentioned that nobody has come in there that has worked as hard as you have. And, you know, that's just a test to both of you guys. You guys have extremely hardworking parents, and I think you guys got that work ethic from, you know, your parents. Yeah, it does take some talent, but the extreme dedication and work ethic. So kudos to you guys and your parents.
What made you, do you feel like, go that long or commit to that length of training, you know, to be as specialized as you are? Like, what, I mean, you could have probably, I guess, pulled out later and just went into, even doing a surgeon, or, you know, you could have probably got into practice a lot quicker than being a specialist. What made you just keep continuing and keep being as specialized as you are?
So, I mean, a lot of it's mentorship, which I think you guys talk about a lot. Early on, I had a mentor that was a plastic surgeon and did craniofacial surgery. And he was successful in both his life and work. And that's really how I define success. It's not just about your career or your job. It's his also his family life and those things. And so that was something that I thought maybe I could aspire to. Oftentimes in medicine, you change your mind a bunch of different times going through medical school, then in residency of what you want to do, what you want to specialize. The beauty of what I do is you get to see kids and you take care of them and their families and their most vulnerable parts of their lives. Kids born with cleft lip and palate, you initially start treating them, you know, basically as soon as they're born. And it's anywhere from 7 to 10 surgeries, usually from when they're age 0 to 18. And you get to, you know, inject in different parts of their life to decrease how much they're marginalized and try to make their lives more normal as they grow. And it's just, it's special. And so, you know, talking to mentors and realizing that those things are possible and you can make those differences really kind of influenced me to choose the specialty that I have. And honestly, there's nothing more gratifying. Like, I mean, in some ways it's selfish because I get to enjoy what I do. I go to work every day and I'm not upset or like, I actually love going to work, which not everybody has that opportunity or possibility. A lot of people, you're, you know, taking care of your family or you need to do what you have to do to get by. And it took a lot of sacrifice, but I get to enjoy what I do for a living, which is really a blessing.
So. Is there a point that you knew? Because I think, you know, you bounced, I know your story, but you bounced deciding, but what was there a point that you knew you were going to be a plastic surgeon and like make that? Was there a moment?
So I tried to do everything else and not go into medicine. So medicine is a commitment, and it is that long drawn out delayed gratification that you guys talked about. And for those people that are thinking about that, you really have to want to do it. And so thinking about all the sacrifices that you'd have to make to accomplish where I've gotten to today, I did try other things. Yeah. So when I first went to college, I thought about being a lawyer. And then for a while, I wanted to be an architect. And then for a while, I was going to be a starving artist. And then some smarter people in my life, my wife and parents, and you guys obviously have helped redirect me and help me get to the point where I wanted to. And part of that was there was a trip that we used to do. I went to UCLA for undergrad, and there was a organization that I was involved in where we'd go down to Mexico and do mission kind of work. And we're in this place called Monclovia Rojas, Mexico. And it was mostly like diabetes care or dentistry and those kinds of things. But that's really when I was like, oh, I really want to help people. And I was speaking Spanish to an elderly lady that was there, and she was talking about how it was great to like relate to a physician because of language. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot in the States where,
right.
As the Hispanic population continues mm-hmm. to grow, I feel very honored to be able to communicate with the families and regain some of the trust that is not always there, especially with the Hispanic population.
That's awesome.
So that was kind of
the moment,
the light, yeah. I guess, when that clicked on, and I was like, all right, I got to do this.
Yeah.
And do whatever it takes to get it.
Yeah, I can. Do you have a question?
Yeah, no, I just want to kind of go back to the challenges, you know, maybe that you faced during your medical. So talk about some of the challenges you faced through that.
My wife was actually out here in California. I went to Texas to do medical school. Baylor was top 10 medical school. So, and you guys were there. So I felt like Houston was a great opportunity, but we've spent that first year apart. And that was really challenging to try to figure out early-ish in our relationship, being apart for that long of a time.
Right.
And then, like I said, you change your mind 100 times throughout medical school and through residency of what you actually want to do.
How many times did you say, I quit? Did that ever happen? Like,
I'm done. I mean, we didn't ever hear it.
Maybe it doesn't happen. I'm
just... You can't really, I mean, you can. Yeah. The problem with medicine is that it is so specialized. If you quit, there's nothing you can do with it. So actually like quitting is a terrible option for people in medical school, because the things that you're learning aren't applicable to anything else. Like, you spend 20 hours in a library reading about some, you know, pathway inside the body that you can't take that pathway and then take it and apply it in business or something else. So I guess I never really thought about quitting, but as you said, there's other specialties that may be a little bit easier to finish in a more, in a shorter time frame, that you could still have an amazing life and give back and do some things. But I don't think it would be as gratifying, as rewarding. As what I do.
Yeah.
And talking about saying no often, I mean, you had to say no to family events and your social life and for the most part, your entire youth, right?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the next phase, because hopefully I'll have some control over my life. I have spent the last definitely 10 years and as a part of clinics and then residency and then my fellowship, where you have to split holidays, you have to split, you know, weekends. And I've worked every Thanksgiving that I can think of. I've worked
7 days a week, right?
Yeah. Every weekend. We have black and gold weekends. So 1 weekend you're on, 1 weekend you're off, but that means 12 days that you're on working and often 100-hour weeks.
But no sleep. I mean, I'll tell you a funny story. So in any pictures that you see my children in, is with Eric and our children sleeping together, because that was nap time for you. Like, if you can get in like 10, 15 minutes of, you know, a quick nap, that was...
Yeah,
so even with my kid,
yeah. I'm very blessed to have a 6-month-old, and most of our pictures are me and him sleeping together, because anytime I can, I can fall asleep standing up if you give me the opportunity.
And going on that note with family and all that, I know you had a a very loving, supportive, beautiful wife in Zahar, and I know she endured a lot.
Because
you guys have been together that whole time. So it wasn't only like decisions you were making alone. It was decisions you guys were making together. Can you like share any insight to that and how that, there's probably other people that could relate I'm sure it would have been a lot easier if you were single just to make some of these decisions than.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sacrifice for me, but it's a much bigger sacrifice for those that didn't choose this life. Like, she also had to deal with my pager going off at 3 a.m. She also had to deal with, you know, these not being able to go to certain holidays because I had to work, or we'd have to spend the holidays apart. She's been amazingly supportive. You guys always talk about picking the right partner, and that's what is the some of the keys to success in terms of your guys' relationship. And for us, 100%. She's my smarter, prettier, better half, and there's no questions about that. And my success is because there's somebody behind me. And so she's the reason for it.
I think it's so crucial, and I think we've said it on numerous episodes, but it's like, you got to get that, so, I mean, whether you're starting a business or going into medicine and dedicating, I mean, you got to have somebody that's going to
support
you. I mean, even for our parents, my dad supported my mom for years at the beginning, you know, he was the teacher and, but I mean, and then even as we were growing up as kids, and we've talked about this in the podcast, I mean, she wasn't around a lot. So he was the one cooking dinners and putting us to bed and doing other stuff while she was working or training or whatever. But I mean, it's, I know there's been a lot of nights it's hard, probably dinner alone, you know, because you got called back into the hospital and you weren't there. You know?
And that's what I'm saying. It's for the people that don't choose this life. It's a much bigger sacrifice. Cause for us, in some ways you get the glory of like, people are like, oh my goodness, like you're actually doing something. But they don't realize, my wife is coming at home. I come home and then I walk in the door and then my beeper goes off and I'm out. And, you know, she's made dinner or plans or whatever. And I'm with
it.
So you sacrifice a lot of your own life and time with family to take care of others, which is truly a privilege. Yes, it does take some sacrifice at home.
I wanted to go back to your school and all the time, because I think this is crucial for a lot of people. I think there's certain things you did to separate yourself from, because you went to some very prestigious programs. Like, it wasn't like you, and I always questioned you, and I'm glad you stuck to your thing, but
because we couldn't do it.
But you, so it wasn't only that you were becoming a plastic surgeon, it was like you also went to some very prestigious top in the country programs, which, so not only did you elevate your career, but you also elevated the places you went to train. So I guess, but we're talking about competing against the entire US. So what did you do? I know you're very handsome because we look alike and you're very smart, but I mean, you did some things, I think, to separate yourself from the crowd. And so people can understand, like, if they're maybe not the most talented, or there are ways to get ahead, you know. I think I'm not saying you don't have talent, you have a lot of extreme talent, but there are some things I think you did along the ways that really made you stand out from the crowd.
So one thing is hard work. Like, our parents always said, if you work hard enough at it, you can achieve amazing things. And so I definitely think I wasn't always the smartest in the room, but I knew I would do whatever I had to get it done. And a lot of that just took more hard work or more time. I wish I could learn how to work smarter sometimes than harder, because sometimes I choose the more difficult path. I think a couple of the things that I did that aren't completely normal. So I did a couple extra years of college. I did another year of research during my medical school training in order to, get into a better residency so that my future would be better. And I took a year off unpaid and spent a year working my tail off in a not really a lab, but a research division in order to help build my CV so that my resume would be better. So then I could, when I was applying, I could get into a better residency, which then set me up to get into a better fellowship. And that took a lot of time and sacrifice. And like I said, hard work. That year of research, I think for most people, research year, they think of, you know, going on vacation, writing a couple papers or doing this and that. I took it as if it was a job and a job opportunity. And so I was there before anybody got there, and I made sure I was the last person to leave. Mm-hmm. My boss got there at 5 a.m. and he usually left at 8, 9 o'clock, and I got there before him. Wow. And I left after him.
And this is just research.
Yeah.
And that was research. Yeah, yeah. That was me sitting at a table getting data. But that proved to him that I was committed.
Mm-hmm.
Proving that you're committed and that you had the work ethic, then that gave me opportunities, and he put me on more things. And then once I showed him that I could do those things, then he put me on the next thing. And so I've also been very fortunate to be in places and given the opportunity to then get to the next level. And what I mean by that is, again, goes back to mom and dad. I couldn't have done it without their help,
yeah,
to be honest with you. And so they've helped support us and do things. And so I feel like I should be proud of what I've accomplished, but I also feel very fortunate to have had them help support us.
Yeah.
How many papers did you publicize over the last 18 years? Do you have a number?
Yeah, I think I'm close to about 90 plus journal articles, which for the medical literature is, we have medical journals that update different treatment practices and things. And I think, yeah.
And put that perspective, right? Like a typical doctor.
Most people don't have that in their whole career.
Their whole career. Yeah, and you did that before just in residency.
Yeah.
Again, it adds, right? I mean, because your boss or your mentor here, I mean, that's really, he was like, there was nobody that it was even in the same ballpark as you, like when you applied, right, for the fellow.
But again, like, I think I took extra time to do those things to set myself up to get in that position. A lot of the things is learning kind of the skills and then being able to apply them later in different settings or aspects. And so actually taking that year off in medical school was one of the smartest things I did, because I really learned how to do research during that time.
Right.
And then that made it possible to be able to do research and residency, which most people, you have such limited time that you can't then learn how to do research in that.
Because you could do it so much quicker.
Because I could do it so much quicker and more efficiently. Yeah. And so, again, I was learning those skills early, and then learning how to then teach other people those things and then delegate a little bit and then figure out how to get the system to work for you instead of working against it.
So working very smart. Yeah. I mean, that's, I mean, again, it's taking the sacrifices up front and delaying that gratification, but then in the end, it propels you so much further. So.
Yeah, medicine is all delayed gratification. Right. Like it definitely, there's a goal that you're working towards, but
you've helped so many people, and I think helped so many. It's got to be extremely rewarding.
Oh, and like,
you know, I think sometimes Joni and I struggle with like our purpose because we took a whole different route. And like, yes, we help people with houses and find houses. We help people with the retirements, but you know, at some point it becomes transactional at times for us. And so we help our staff and try to feedback into them. But I think what you're doing on a day-to-day got to be like you got to go, even though there's probably some very tough days like anybody, but you can go home and be like, I made a dramatic impact in this kid's life that's gonna totally change his life for the rest of the team, right? I mean, do you
but that's what I'm saying. I feel fortunate to be able to go to work and really be able to take care of those patients. And it's selfish because it's great for me. Like, I mean, I love it. And it makes you so appreciative of your life. I mean, you see some of these patients that, like I said, we take care of kids that are born with craniofacial deformities or anomalies, and they're going to be having surgery every year for the whole first 18 years of their life. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, in and out of the hospital and all these things. And, not just for the kids, but the family sacrifices that they make, to take care of those kids. And, you come home and you're so grateful for mm-hmm. your life. And so like I said, in some ways it's selfish, but I feel very fortunate for the job that I have.
Yeah. Do you have a case or a surgery that you felt like that you remember that just, is it like, you know, like in real estate, like your best deal ever, but like is there a case that you're like, man, I made such a big game? Or it could be maybe like,
I think every case is probably
gotta be some that you remember. I mean, you remember the bad ones, but you also, mm-hmm. There's gotta be some good ones. Like really, like is there one or you did such a crazy surgery type of thing that was just like cutting edge?
So kind of also what you guys talked about, I think you learn more from your failures than your successes. Mm. Your successes, you don't know if you were successful because you were just lucky or you just skimmed by. Definitely the cases that stick out to me are not the fun ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about impacting a child that you made, like from where they started to when maybe you finish? And like you said, it's an ongoing thing, but just
I mean, there's one family that I probably spent almost 6 months with this year. A beautiful little girl got a dog bite to her head, basically it ripped through her skull, took part of her brain.
Wow, just emotional.
And she had some early complications that occurred, not at our hospital, but at a separate hospital, but with people that are mm-hmm. amazing surgeons and way more talented than I am. And so it was kind of daunting to have taken that case on. And they were brought over to be treated by my boss, Dr. Arata. And you know, again, it was about applying skills from things that he had learned in the past. Like, you're not always faced with these situations where there's an open brain just sticking out. Mm-hmm. And so our team, along with the neurosurgical team, had to figure out a treatment plan that would work in order to get some coverage to close this little girl's skull. And then also protect her brain and then get her to be able to live a normal life.
Wow. Wow.
And part of that is that we've trapped her in the hospital for 6 months. And we did probably 10 total procedures on her.
Wow.
Before luckily we were able to get her out of the hospital. We did a bunch of temporary surgeries to cover the brain, and then we ultimately did a big surgery to remove all the skin around and hair around to be able to give her wow. hair bearing skin over her head. But that family, they were in the hospital every day for six wow. months, living in the hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, they had what was a normal, beautiful, beautiful baby, and then their whole life flipped upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And they were coming to us after having a complication. So already kind of somewhat mistrusting and somewhat blaming themselves for what had happened.
Right.
And you have to get through, get them to trust you, get them to agree with the treatment plan that you are doing, and then push forward and hope that you don't mess anything up along the way. It was amazing that we've got her through it all of it. And like I said, after 6 months of her being in the hospital, she was able to leave the hospital and has good return of most of her function. And we got her completely hair covered scalp, which is, we had to expand her skin on her scalp and then rearrange it. So she sticks out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's, we learned from not the complication that we had, but the one that, mm-hmm. you know, came to us.
Yeah.
But that was a pretty emotional time having her leave the hospital.
Just coming up with probably something that's never happened, right? Like, I mean, you guys are like uncharted territory.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then just the emotional psychology part of all your job.
Yeah.
On top of everything else.
Yeah. The surgery sometimes is the easy part.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really the dealing with the family situations, dealing with the patients to make sure that they really understand what you're doing. But it's so rewarding. I can't tell you.
Well, you're truly making an impact in this world, and you know, I can't wait, and we can't wait to see what you do. Tell us where you're headed.
So I was very fortunate to get a job at Oregon Health and Science University up in Portland. I'm starting as a craniofacial surgeon there as an assistant professor. And really excited to see what the next step takes.
Yeah. Well, as one of the attendees mentioned as well this week, they got the number one pick. So that just shows you know, how focused, how dedicated, how committed, the sacrifices that you put into this and to truly to be successful in anything, doesn't matter what it is. That's the common theme, right? Commitment, sacrifice. But Eric, I mean, that you're to the extreme of of it all, and we appreciate you.
Yeah. Where can the listeners follow you or follow your story? Is there?
Instagram at Dr. Eric Wilson Quill. That's kind of the main thing, and then sometime I'll when I get up there and establish a website and those kinds of things.
It's good. Instagram,
I'll let you know, but good. Instagram's probably the easiest thing. Social media is taking over everything. So, that would be the one place, I guess.
Awesome. Well, we, again, as Jonas, as we started this, we're very proud of you and know that we can't wait to see like really what you're going to, I mean, truly you're just getting started. And so, I mean, it's going to be neat to see the next several years and I hope you embrace this time too. Now that you put in all this hard work, enjoy some of it. And enjoy some of this. Take some time. It takes some time, you and Sahar and Ramsey, and really some time together, because also enjoy the, and you do, and don't get me wrong, but like, I think this next chapter is going to allow you some time. To
as enjoy. I said in the speech that I didn't get through because I cried. But no, you guys always inspire me to do more. You guys are always pushing the envelope and always trying to find the next best thing and never settling. And I think that's one of the things that I always look to you guys for, is to continue to inspire me to do more and be better and all of those things, because that's what you guys are doing with your life. So keep up the good work. I mean, complacency is definitely not in your vocabulary. So, I can't even say it. So, you guys have always inspired me as well. So keep it up, and
we appreciate you.
Yeah, we're great.
Look forward to seeing what comes out of you two, and thank you for this opportunity. This
is awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you for taking the time again. We appreciate it. I think listeners got a lot of value.
Oh, yeah, and
hopefully you inspired some future doctors out there in the world. So thank you all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. If you like this, or you know somebody, or you think this could benefit somebody, please share it. And we'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Yeah, thanks.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.